Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday Early Access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Well, I think if I had a crystal ball, I would answer that question. I think that we have 11 picks. I've always looked at draft picks as currency. You can either use that on a player, you can trade up, you can trade back, you can trade for future picks in future years. I think we're fortunate to be in this position. I think that as we continue to sign back our players, as many as we can, our good young players, we're going to be in a situation where, you know, salary cap is critical. And so for us, young talent, the influx of young players every single year competing to make the roster, I think is really important. Now, we have a good team. We feel good about our roster. It's going to be hard for 11 players to make the team out of the gates this year. I mean, if they do, it'd be incredible. History tells us that probably not all 11 picks are going to make the initial 53-man roster, which is a good problem to have. It means we're a talented team. So I like having 11 picks. I think it gives us a lot of flexibility in different ways. And, I think that our goal would be to have extra picks every single year.
So that was some of the sounds from Eric DaCosta earlier today. The Ravens held their annual, quote, liars luncheon, fed the media, and then met with the media, Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh, though Harbs did mostly sitting. He didn't really have many questions pointed his way because, quite frankly, this was draft stuff, so that was more Eric's purview. And Eric answered questions for about 45 minutes, and Bone and I were there. It was a very interesting early, I guess, late morning, early afternoon.
Yeah, there's always trepidation with this, right? These teams do this. It's kind of a publicity stunt, right? I mean, you're sort of gearing up more attention and focus on the draft. The league has turned the draft into a huge moneymaker. The teams can use this as a chance to send messages and sub messages and, you know, basically propaganda out into the media and into other war rooms, trying to influence or dissuade or confuse. You're also sometimes sending messages to agents and players. And how much of it, you know, how many clues are really left behind? How much is there to really glean? I think that's highly debatable. But, like, it's impossible to, like, obfuscate everything, right? It's impossible for everything to be a pre-planned smokescreen. They kind of have an idea what questions are going to be asked. But to have some sort of stock answer that you think, mm-hmm. you know, serves your higher goals is difficult. So, like, when I listened to him talk about the potential to draft a tight end, I was like, when I listened to him talk about the offensive line and the inherent value that keeping Ronnie Stanley provides, but then also, you know, kind of admit that they do like drafting offensive linemen and they think they're pretty good at it, you know, you're like, even the way they talked about a kicker. I mean, you can't obscure everything. Like, this roster has certain strengths, mostly on the a lot of strengths, extreme strengths on the offensive side of the ball. They're dealing with a situation with their kicker that seemed fairly improbable 6-7 months ago, but is very real right now. And the defense has not been able to do the things it does in the regular season and the postseason. So we know they're going to lean into some of these truths. And, you know, I think at times they are just kind of saying what it is because it's pretty clear it is what it is.
Yeah, it's trying to parse through all of the information. Yes. And Eric DaCosta, a couple of years ago, I remember him being asked about the Liars Luncheon name, and he thought it was an appropriate name for this press conference. But that being said, you're right, Jason. It's not like he was just blowing smoke for 45 minutes. That's not the case. I think some of the big takeaways, and you mentioned it, the Mark Andrews of it all, him leaning into saying that the strength of this draft is the middle rounds. Where do they have a lot of picks? The middle rounds.
Oh, and how many draftable players are there?
217 draftable players. I got on my little notepad here, Jason. And he
how can you read it on that notepad?
It's a post-it note. Yeah.
He compared it to 2022, which, remember, that's when they selected the fourth-rounders that year. Said that they're going to draft a corner. Said they're going to draft a safety. I asked him about returner. John Harbaugh interrupted Eric DaCosta and said, yes, I would like to see a returner.
We brought that up a week ago. That's still a significant need.
So I think there were definitely some you know, notable quotes there.
I also was interested, obviously, at the end of the press conference, he was asked about the fifth-year options, and Eric does not answer fifth-year option questions, except one time. If you remember, the one time he answered a fifth-year option question, he said they were going to pick up the fifth-year option of Hollywood Brown. And then he was traded. And Eric actually volunteered today that trade was consummated on the Monday before the draft, but was not announced because they didn't want other teams to know they might be interested in a wide receiver. So that said, we were joking, a few of us were joking about it beforehand, because Hollywood, if you remember, that trade got done so early that he was at the Cardinals draft party in Arizona. So he knew it was done, and Eric volunteered that it was done on the Monday before the draft. And then John joked and said, yeah, I knew that one ahead of time. So, but yeah, he said, look, we'll announce at the appropriate time. So that's Hamilton and Linderbaum.
Yeah, I mean, look, we broke down their positions of need. We've broken down the strengths of this draft. This draft is going to be about trying to find potential starters on defense. It's going to be about replacing a kicker who looks like he's going to leave under fairly despicable circumstances. It's going to be about finding future starters on the offensive line, maybe not present-day starters, but I think they're looking for a couple of guys who could be starting as soon as next year on the offensive line. And it's going to be about probably doubling and tripling down on the front seven.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. He brought up that stat saying that they have the lowest amount of cap spending on their offensive line, and he was proud of that because of the fact that they're all draft picks. The only guy that's getting paid real money right now is Ronnie Stanley.
And they don't like to pay two or three guys on the offensive line, and I'm still not sure the prospect of a $20-plus million center, I just don't know if, as good as that player is, he's not best of breed. He's not the best on the planet. And they don't like paying guys as the best on the planet if that's not who they are, especially if they play a position that isn't one of the three or four most important on the football field, and especially if he plays a position where they've been willing to play undrafted free agents there in playoff games.
Oh, yeah. They don't mind. Hey,
was Patrick McCary?
Yeah. They were rotating tackles in a playoff game at one point in time.
Yeah. So the offensive line part of this, it does intrigue me, because with 11 picks, if they use them all or they use most of them, there's going to be an offensive lineman or two in there.
And that's where it kind of goes back to, left tackle, getting a true developmental left tackle. I'm not saying it has to be a first rounder, second rounder, but someone that
you can hold. Is that Rosengarten? Does it have to be a left tackle?
Yeah. I do want to point out, and Jason wasn't there, but Tim and I were there. I thought the food was exceptional today. I just a shout really out. Like, food I don't know.
What did you guys have?
They had steak. They had chicken. Yeah,
did you go in the cafeteria?
Yeah,
one of these
cafeteria.
Where you go to the cafeteria?
Yeah, it's the one time.
And just order whatever you want?
Dude, they had ravioli.
They like they full salad bar.
I don't even like mushrooms.
How many
mushroom
doggy ravioli. Bags did Aloysius bring back with him? Did he know it was in the cafeteria?
Yeah, because that's where
he would have brought an igloo cooler, I would think. Under circumstance
he came
like that.
Late. I was very surprised, but he was talking to someone on the PR staff saying Manny, I guess someone that works in the kitchen.
Yeah, he's been there forever.
Made him a box and he brought it. I swear to God.
Well, they know him.
Oh, we got to make sure we ask him about it. Yes. I'm writing that down right now for tomorrow.
Yes. He did.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does that surprise you, though?
No. He's Jerry Bleepin' Coleman.
Yeah, that's right. That's the doctor right there. Hey, huge Tuesday show. Get started guest-wise. Talk a lot of baseball. Orioles back in action against the Guardians tonight. It's a 7 o'clock first pitch. So Baltimore baseball tonight at 6 live from Pickles National TV. That's why 96:30 start. John Mioli, Baltimore Banner, covers the O's, joins at 2:30. Baltimore Oriole Hall of Famer, also part of our Baltimore Baseball Tonight coverage. Mike Bordick at 3 o'clock. We'll talk the Liars luncheon and Ravens draft plans with our friend Jonas Schaefer, covers the Ravens for the Banner at 4 o'clock. And then previewing this series and also what are the Browns doing in the draft? Daryl Ryder from the Fan in Cleveland at 4:30.
Look, we will decipher a little bit of fact from fiction and play you guys the most pertinent clips from the Liars lunch. We will dig down a little bit more on the offensive line vis-a-vis the draft. The Orioles face a lefty tonight. Did you know? Despite only doing things to improve their lineup that supposedly should work against lefties, the Orioles and the Kansas City Royals are the only teams in baseball without a home run off a left-handed hitter to this point, a left-handed pitcher to this point in the season. We will dig down on the Orioles lineup. We will look at the Guardians. Morton on the mound and the other team pitching a lefty might not be a great night for the Orioles, but who knows? Brian Baker.
Bake Show.
Is the moonwalking Bake Show all the way back? Are we buying that he could be?
Is he better than ever,
so far,
Jason?
He's been their most impactful reliever. He's been their most efficient.
Yeah.
How many times has he come in, throw one or two pitches, get a double play, and wham, bam, thank you, man?
Bake Show.
We will hear some of what Mike Elias had to say to the award-winning Hot Stove, or not Hot Stove, Front Office
GM,
Show.
Yeah.
Front Office Show on MLB Radio, Sirius Radio Network. A couple surprises along the way as well.
Coming up next, though, we talked about the Liars' lunch, and now we'll hear from Eric DaCosta. What did he have to say today at the press conference? You're going to hear it next here on the...
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Good question. I think we'll stick to the board like we typically do, historically, and I know this is always a question We've been a best available player team, and we spent a lot of time. We spent 8 months really building the board based on the rankings of the players and how they stack against each other. And we believe that really, if we're going to build a team, that's the best way to approach it. So, you know, I think we definitely look at the different needs of our team. We spend a lot of time talking about the roster and the players that we have and things like contract status and all those other things that go into it, the health of our players. In the end, I think this is a really, really pretty good draft class with talent across the board. And as we see the players come off the board, we'll wait for a good one to fall to us.
It's Eric DeCosta earlier today talking about how, with them doing most of their work in free agency on the offensive side of the football, could this be a heavy defensive draft for the Baltimore Ravens? Could you see that, Jason?
Yeah, I have a hard time seeing it be anything but that. And there are years where their needs and the strengths of a draft and the depth, not just the quality, but the quantity of a draft, don't match up. And there have been years where, let's face it, yeah, best position, best player available at the wide receiver position, best player available at linebacker, best player available at edge, right? Like, when they took Bateman and Hollywood, those years, everybody knew they were taking one of those receivers very likely in that spot. When they took Hayden Hurst, they were hunting for a tight end. They took him before Lamar bleeping Jackson.
Yeah.
When they took Patrick Queen, they were taking one of those three linebackers, Murray, whichever one was still there. Sometimes that's how it is. When they let Judon walk and made the trade with Kansas City to be in position to take a pass rusher at the end of the first round, they took I don't know if I'd call him a pass rusher, but he's an edge defender.
He got 10 sacks last year.
Yes. This year, I think because there are so many options on the defensive side of the ball, and they, you know, a safety, a corner, a D tackle, an edge could all make sense. They don't have to lock into a position, but I think we know the positions that they're hunting early in this draft. I think we know what it takes to make this roster, especially at certain position groups, barring just an absolute rash of injuries. I think we know what their trends and tendencies are. I think we know that there's certain position groups they love drafting, even if they don't need them. And this year they need a lot of those position groups. So I'd be surprised if they threw us a ton of curveballs. Again, as we talked about a lot on the show yesterday, the curveball I'd love to see them throw us is how they manipulate their draft capital and do so in a way they normally don't, which would mean moving up in one of the top couple of rounds, maybe even somewhat substantially, to get the kind of guy who can put a roster already this good, possibly over the top by January.
Yeah, we did the exercise last week, and where could Eric DeCosta double up on in terms of positions? And it was overwhelmingly on the defensive side of the bubble. Football, defensive line, you could use a pair. Edge, you could use a pair. Eric DeCosta pretty much speaking in an absolute, saying they are going to draft a corner. They are going to draft a safety. They could even double up at those positions where there may not be glaring needs on the defensive side of the football, but the needs far outweigh the offensive side.
More from Eric DeCosta earlier today. I remember when the season ended, we thought Ronnie Stanley was done here, especially after the Eric's end-of-season press conference. But then the next time he spoke, he was confident that Ronnie was back, and he is back. And Eric talked about the importance of bringing Ronnie Stanley back.
Well, left tackles don't grow on trees, you know, first of all. Ronnie had a great season. I think he had one of his best years last year. He's really, I think, grown into being one of the leaders of our team. And just looking out at the draft in free agency, we just didn't really see a lot of guys that we felt were better than him. And my experience with the draft, when you're picking in the 20s, in the late 20s, it's very hard to get left tackles. Those guys fly off the board. And so you think you have a chance, and then what you realize is you're picking 25, 26, 27, there's five tackles, and all five tackles get picked before pick 20. And so for us, making that investment in Ronnie, knowing him as a person, you know, his ability as a left tackle to protect the quarterback and be a run blocker and be a leader up on the offensive line, I think was important.
Ronnie Stanley, leader, and we saw some of that a year ago as well. And Eric did bring up at some point during the presser that they have, like, they're one of the lowest cap allotted towards the O-line in football. But
the lowest.
Yeah. But Ronnie, obviously, a big chunk of what they do give to their offensive line.
And the Ronnie signing is it avoids the stuff that they were so paralyzed by that it frankly derailed their roster building for 2 or 3 years. That money in year three or year four. We don't want that hurting us. And then they finally got around avoidable years. It is what it is. It's a 2-year deal. It can't cripple you. It can't kill your cap. You don't have to worry about a credit card bill coming due that you can't afford to pay. And you're right. That's the only guy they're paying. And again, personally, we might be doing this a year from now, and he's still the only guy they're paying. Because I am not sure about how that's going to play out with Linderbaum, unless he's really willing to do a deal that he probably shouldn't be willing to do. And listening to him talk today, and he was fairly introspective about that, this whole Ronnie Stanley situation. It did get my head spinning. Like, the way we've talked about D-tackles in this coming draft, if we were talking about that same offensive tackles that same way, I do wonder if Ronnie Stanley's not here and they think Rosengarten goes to the left side and we draft a right tackle who can do what Rosengarten did last year. You know what I mean? And away we go.
It's interesting. I could see, there probably was an alternate universe where that happens.
It's possible, but I would say if Ronnie's gone, that is a glaring hole at tackle. Because don't have...
Like most of the betting markets have it at like 6.5 offensive linemen, and it's juiced to the under. A lot of years, that's 8.5. You know what I mean? That might be 9.5 in a really good offensive tackle draft. And most of these... I shouldn't say tackle, because they're interior guys are getting drafted. Like, we've seen years where a third of the first round is offensive linemen. If this was that kind of draft with where they're picking, you know what I mean? Because people are still taking wide receivers. They're still going to take quarterbacks. We're not in that market. You know what I mean? They're going to take corners. We don't need to be in a corner market. We just took a corner first last year. There's always going to be 5 or 6 corners who go. So I just wonder if they had assessed the draft that way, where they're like, if we get the fourth or fifth tackle in this draft, that's a kid who some years we would have had a top 12 or top 10 grade on.
Yeah.
We're just, you know what I mean? We're cool to do that.
Yeah.
No, they're looking at it holistically. They're looking at the whole picture. If Bobby D can tell you about next year's draft, people in the castle can tell you about, by next year, I mean 2026.
Yeah, yeah.
So I do think that played a role in them coming at Ronnie the way they came at Ronnie.
Let's hear one more from Eric. Cut 10, Beltway Ben. How many draftable players do they have on their list?
The way that I look at the draft is you've got on day one, right, the first day of the draft, there's going to be 32 picks. So you've got to have 32 players that you would take in the first round. And so I always answer the question it's we have 32 players in the first round. You have to have at least 32 to pick. Now, is it a situation where maybe the totality of all these players in the first round might not be as talented as another year? You know, maybe that's the case. But I see a lot of opportunity in this draft class, really, in the middle rounds. I see more players. I see more draftable players. So we have 217 players right now on the front board. And there have been years where we've had a hard time getting to 160, 165. So there's a lot of draftable players. That means that the mid rounds are going to be really good. And also, I think undrafted free agency should have a chance to be really, really good for us. But I really think that if you're going to have 11 picks, this is a year that reminds me a little bit of 2022 from the standpoint of the depth of the draft, really across the middle rounds, the third, fourth, fifth, sixth rounds, I think will be pretty good. We see a lot of talent in that range, so that's an opportunity for us to get better as a team.
How do you read that, Jason?
I think he's telling you the truth.
The question is, I just want to say, and I think it was asked by IA Hall of Famer Jonah Schaefer. He was asked about the first round, and does it feel like there's a deep first round? Like, do you have 32 first round grades? And he spun it into this.
Yeah, look, I've never heard of a draft where people have 32 first round grades. Now, but again, there's a difference between saying a kid is an absolute first round grade in any draft versus what he's talking about is who are the 32 we're willing And some years maybe it's a little whatever. But you've got to turn a card in. Like,
that's what you're saying. You got to have 32 ready.
Like in this draft, they're picking 27th. Yeah. I mean, you'd have to have 32 in case you drop back to 32. But if you're picking on day one, you better have a name you're comfortable with. I haven't asked people, hey, how many actual blue chip first round grades do you have? But I mean, there's been years where people have said 13, 15, 17. In terms of players, they feel like you're going to get first round value out of for sure. Not that anything's for sure in the draft.
Coming up next, we switch to baseball, and the Orioles sit at 6-9. Does the bounce back begin against the Guardians tonight? We'll ask John Mioli, covers the O's for the Banner. He joins us next. Orioles sit at 6-9 as they start a 3-game series with the Guardians tonight. You know that, Bone. They have an all right-handed, well, mostly right-handed lineup. We'll get to you in a little bit. Let's talk some Orioles now as we go out to the Winter Nation Fan Guest Hotline. John Mioli covers the O's for the Baltimore Banner. He joins us now. And, John, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. So, Charlie Morton on the bump tonight. He has not looked good so far. They sit at 6-9. Where are you on your concern scale about this team? Is it just early, or are there some signs that are not good for you?
Oh, man. I've been trying to figure out the right way to answer that for as long as the season's been going on. I think that if I had to put myself in one category, I would do the still early, but I don't think we have seen through any of this team's competitive era, whatever you want to call it, basically since Adley Rutschman came up in 2022, the amount of mental mistakes and weird stuff that doesn't typically happening. So I think this offense is going to broadly hit. I think the rotation, they're not going to be asked a lot of, but they're going to be able to be fine as opposed to not good, which is what they are now. But the thing that has stuck out to me these first couple of weeks, and not so much this weekend, but before that, is this team was just making a lot of on-field miscues that are not the kind of things that good teams do. And that was more concerning than a couple of weeks of the rotation not being very good or an inconsistent offense.
But could some of that be that, O'Neill is cooked? O'Neill is a bat. He's not a baseball player, right? Could it be that he can't move laterally? He doesn't read balls. He's not a smart baseball player. He doesn't run bases. He doesn't know when to slide. He can mash left-handed pitching, but you know what I mean? Maybe they didn't bird dog that one the right way. We've been talking about Heston can't play corner outfield forever. They're still playing Kobe Mayo at third base in Norfolk. Tell me why. You know what I mean? So, could some of it be baked into their cake? Jackson Holliday still hasn't played a whole lot of second base, and he doesn't play against lefties, so that means he's also not fielding. So, could some of it just be that Gary Sanchez, no one's ever signed him because he is great with pitchers, he calls an amazing game, and he's a plus defensive catcher. Maybe this is just what they're valuing and not valuing.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some of that, Tyler O'Neill, somebody whose body has gone through the things that he is, if you had, not to say this is what happened, but if you had told me that he was going to look like he wasn't moving very well on a 40-degree night in Kansas City in April, I would probably believe that and hope that he would move better or do things a little more, be a little more locked in and engaged, when it's a little warmer. But he is here for a specific reason, that's to hit, and you need to hit at a pretty high level to do those things. To not do the other things you need to do. I think there are some things that are kind of baked in. Gary Sanchez is here to back up Adley Rutschman and hit lefties, and you need to be good at. I think what you're getting at, and I think what has not happened in the first couple weeks of the season is that they have a bunch of players who are here for a specific reason, warts and all. And if they don't do the thing that they were brought in for, which is hit lefties or catch the ball when it's hit to them or get on base, stuff like that. If they don't do the one thing that they're supposed to be good at, then there are a lot of questions as to what they are doing, period. And some of this is, some of this is early days. I don't know that they're going to change how they plan on approaching the season on tax day based on, all the work that went into putting the roster together in the way that they did. But all that being said, they don't have – I think in baseball sense, they do. Nobody's running away with this division. Even when the Rays won their first 13 games, the Orioles still ended up winning the division. These types of things happen. It's early, but they don't have the sentimental or the I don't want to say cachet, but it's hard to not play well when you don't have the equity built up with the fans that I think this team has struggled to have in recent years.
John, I think we all had questions with how they constructed this starting rotation. Tomo Sugano, he struggled over the weekend. Cade Povich, Charlie Morton's on the mound tonight. He's yet to have a passable start. Do you believe that this group can get any better? Right now, they're 29th in ERA.
Yeah, I'm of the camp. It's kind of like case by case. You know, Cade Povich is young and is learning on the job. He's filling up the strike zone just like he's being told to, and, you know, he's being hit hard-ish, but the results are okay. Dean Kramer is somebody I put into a category of, like, if you parse out, you know, pre-May 1st Dean Kramer versus the rest of the season Dean Kramer, mm-hmm. what you're going to get the rest of the season is typically better if you can get to that point. And it's not like there's anybody knocking on the door to take his rotation spot. So I put him in a category of somebody who's probably you can count on figuring it out. My newsletter for the banner Inside the Dugout this week is in production as we speak. It's written and it's centered on, you know, Sugano and Charlie Morton, and in the idea that the Orioles pitching philosophy is to throw quality strikes in the zone. And these are two pitchers who have not shown either. I think it would be some combination of willingness and ability to fill up the zone and throw the ball over the plate. And Charlie Morton's somebody who's pretty consistently done that. He has the lowest zone percentage of his entire career this season so far. Granted, we're talking about three starts, but when he does come in the zone, he's also getting hit harder than he has in ever before. So it's one of those double-edged swords. Same with Tomoyuki Sugano, who was never going to come here and pound the zone with his fastball. That was not what the Orioles signed him for. But when he has been in the zone with his fastball, it's gotten hit. And you need to be able to pitch in the zone to make hitters chase at this level, to make them swing at the pitches that you want them to swing at. You have to throw it in places that they would typically swing. So it's early for all of them. I'm wondering if this is going to be a trend, though, because we saw during the bad old years, as I like to call them, that, you know, pitchers who don't throw the ball in the strike zone typically don't for a reason. It's because they don't have the conviction to do so. They don't have the conviction in their stuff. They don't have the conviction in their command to challenge hitters over the plate. And if that's what we're seeing with some of these more experienced pitchers that the Orioles have, then that is something that I would be concerned about long term.
Talking with John Mioli, it's Inside Access here on the Fan. John, I want to get nailed down more on Morton if we can. Everything about him in his past is true, but he's also 41 years old.
His curveball looks like garbage, was his moneymaker.
But I want it to succeed, but watching that start in Arizona, and I've watched a lot of baseball in my life, and I don't consider myself to be the smartest baseball guy in the world, but that was a painful watch. And he hadn't been good in his other two starts either. Like, I don't know where the confidence comes from to think that the 41-year-old guy who can't seem to get through an inning without some struggles is going to all of a sudden be better.
Yeah, and you know, the only person that can possibly have confidence in that is him. If he thinks that, you know, and to the flip side, the person who, you know, he knows better than anyone what he needs to do to get where he needs to be, whether it's a big adjustment, a small adjustment, you know, a grip here, a release point here. Like, when you have pitched that long, that is the type of stuff where you can tweak things by one degree and your results flip totally. But the types of things that he's shown this year, the struggles he's had, are the type that, you know, that somebody who knows themselves and knows their stuff, the long at bats, the lack of desire to go over the plate, like, that's the type of stuff that happens if you don't have that belief. And that's where my own concern would be with Charlie Morton is, does he think that he has the stuff to get hitters out in the zone? Can he attack the way that he wants to attack? Is his stuff there? His fastball velocity is a little down. They didn't sign him to blow hitters away with his fastball. They want him to, you know, be efficient, keep the ball on the ground, and that's stuff that hasn't happened yet this year. So,
I think we lost John. Well, John, you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, sorry. I thought we lost you for a second. Well, you've been someone who's been, fairly willing to buy into their hitting incubator, and that if nothing else, this team should be a well above average lineup. This team should be a well above average run scoring team. If we go back to July 1st of last year, and I know it's hard to, you know, go from one season to the next, but if you go back to last July 1st, they are dead average in on base, in slug, in OPS. And this year, they're 22nd in OPS with runners on base. They have just four home runs with runners on base. That's 23rd in Major League Baseball. They're 21st with runners in scoring position. They're 26th in walk rate. They're 17th in weighted on base average. Are you still as sure that this lineup is not only going to be good enough to offset the pitching that looks pretty rough, but is going to be able to do the things they could do last year with, you know, Gunnar having an MVP first half, Adley having an MVP first half, and Santander providing 40 switch hit home runs?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I'm going, given what we've seen from the pitching staff and kind of the questions as to what that's going to look like, I'm not sure anyone can be counted on to hit enough to make that okay. I do think that there's, you know, there's still a quorum of good hitters. There's still plenty of guys who can be the types who have, you know, high 700s, like low 800s OPSs as the season progresses. They just haven't, you know, I think a lot of this is going to start with, you know, Gunnar Henderson getting back to form. Adley Rutschman has been good. For better or worse, this team goes from there. And it's a lot of pressure for those two guys. I think you can already see some of the swings that Gunnar's taking. Mm-hmm. You know, he is hitting the ball hard, but he's striking out a lot. He's trying to pull this team out of its rut himself. I think he can do that. I don't think you can do that when you try, but I think he has the capability to do that. I'm willing to give the offense a little more rope here than the evidence would suggest. But I also think that Colton Cowser not being in there and not being one of those guys who's just straight up in the lineup every single day is meaningful.
John Mioli covers the O's for the Baltimore Banner. John, thanks as always for your time. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Talk soon, guys.
Hey, Mike Bordick's going to join us at 3 o'clock. But coming up next, one of the real bright spots so far this season has been Brian Baker out of the bullpen. Are we buying the Bake Show? We'll tell you next here on The Fan. Brian Baker, a.k.a. Bake Show. He's thrown 7 1/3 innings this year so far. 4 hits, just 1 run. He gave up that run in a game he got the win in against Toronto on Saturday. 1 walk, 9 strikeouts, and he's getting double play balls as well.
Yeah, to me the big difference is the changeup, and the changeup against lefties has become an absolute weapon. I mean, that's where he's struggled against lefties in his career, but like last year he threw 35 changeups to lefties all season. He's thrown 12 already this year. And that's where the ground balls come from. That's where some of the swing and miss comes from. And the league does not have a hit off his change yet. Still early, obviously. And the slider, I think, has played up because of the change. And the slider's been a real plus pitch for him. Look, everybody up here, for the most part, can hit velo. And the four-seamer, they're slugging .444 off of. So these other pitches have to be plus-plus, I think, to keep him off that fastball and make him a true three-pitch mix pitcher. If it just goes back to fastball-slider, I think he's in trouble. But, I mean, his baseball savant page is on fire. Like, if you're a pitcher, you want that page to be red. And, it's pretty ridiculous. 89th percentile in off-speed run value, 72nd percentile in breaking ball value, 74th percentile in pitching run value overall, 82nd percentile in expected ERA, 97th percentile in K rate, 81st percentile in walk rate. He's a guy who has given out free passes in the past, 72nd percentile in whiff rate, and they're still not really chasing much. And I think there's more chase to be had from that changeup. And the more he throws it, the better his touch and feel will get. But like, when you come in and get into a high leverage situation with multiple men on base and get two outs with one pitch and do it repeatedly more than once this early in the season, you're living right.
And how he's getting those double play balls is his ground ball percentage is way up year over year. It's up over 10%. And guys, just in situations with men on base, it's been 10 plate appearances, 6 strikeouts. With runners in scoring position, 4 plate appearances, 3 strikeouts. He's been nails.
He's the go-to guy in inherited runner situations. He's doing what they used to ask Colom to do.
So? the question. Are you buying it? Is this sustainable? Are we going to see Brian Baker? Not he's not going to every seven innings be this lights out, but is he going to be a quality reliever for this team?
Do I think he could stick around all season?
Yes.
Let's put it that way. I do. He's out of options. They've stuck with him this long. They don't want to give him away. He has they want growth mindset. They want you to adapt and evolve and emerge, and he has. And look, they've trusted him in the past when I'm like, why do they trust this guy as much as they do? He's given them reason to trust him now. We know that Cano is not good with inherited runners on.
Not.
We know they don't have a right-handed length guy with Suarez being out. We know that as much as they want to pretend that Soto is a true reliever, he's a lefty-lefty guy. He's a lefty-lefty specialist. If he faces righties, he will get hit hard. And Dominguez right now is their plan B closer slash setup guy. And I don't trust Sino Perez against anybody.
Nah, yeah, he looks terrible.
So I think Baker is, yes, I think Baker is on the A-team right now. He's a big part of the A-team, and he's the go-to guy in inning 5, 6, or 7 with somebody on base.
Bone, you buying?
I think Jason put it right. I'm buying that he can stick around just based on what we've seen. Is he going to be this dominant? I'm going to wait and see this because we've seen him have these Linsanity stretches in the past where he looks really overpowering and really good. This does feel a little bit different in large part because of the changeup and Ben McDonald.
He's so economical. We've seen him do that in the past, but it's 3-2 and then he throws a high heater and somebody chases it.
Yes.
He wasn't getting out of innings on 5 and 7 pitches.
And the ground ball rate is way, way up, which definitely makes you feel good.
Coming up next, he's an Oriole Hall of Famer. He's part of our Baltimore Baseball Tonight coverage. Is Mike Bordick buying the Bake Show? We'll ask him that and more next here on The Fan.